I won't be the holdout that just can't get off the ice. I'm the guy who's trying to melt the ice so I can fish in my boat.
Time for the Angler Within podcast with Roy Bilby.
I want to put this out there as a safety tip, and I think this is critically important. I never knew this could happen, and it was on our, this happened locally, so it was on our local news one night, and it caught my attention, because if you're a person that uses a pop-up shanty, and you use a heater in that, like one of the buddy heaters, any of the propane heaters, you need to know about this. There was a guy, I believe he was on Lake George. He was someplace in our region, and he had his two daughters with him, and he set up his shanty, and he put his heater in there and got it going to warm everything up first. Then he went in and drilled the holes so they could ice fish. When he pulled the auger out, the plume of water came up like 3 feet out of the hole and then went back down and looked like it was boiling. And then it came back up a second time, and there was a huge fireball flash. It burnt a hole right through the side of their ice shanty.
Really?
And his one little girl, her face was severely burnt.
Oh, my God.
He took her out and put her face down in the snow to get everything out. The other daughter had the skin falling right off the back of her hands. They put them in the snow. They took them to the hospital, took them to a burn center, got them treated. They were severely burnt. And what happened was he got his propane heater going inside the shanty, and shanties are vented. You know, you can use a propane heater in there. You can stay warm. But what happened is he had that heater going with that open flame inside that shanty, and when he cut the hole in the ice, there are pockets of methane gas that get trapped underneath the ice in random locations from the decaying matter on the bottom of the lakes, from decomposition and all the silt and all that stuff. But from the decomposition, it creates methane gas, which rises through the water column and gets trapped under the ice in air pockets. And apparently he drilled, there's no way to know this. And he had no way of knowing this, but this is the first time I've ever heard of it. And I'm sure it's not the only time it's ever happened, that he drilled the hole right where that air pocket was, where that methane gas was trapped. And that's why it forced the water out of the hole. But that methane gas came into that shanty with that open flame, and it just instantly, there was a fireball. And so they were putting out a warning on our news, and I'm putting it out to anybody who listens to this podcast. If you use a heater in a shanty, always, always drill your holes first and give it a few minutes for everything to air out with your doors open and everything before you enclose it and then start up that heater. Give that, if there's methane there, if you happen to be in a pocket where there was methane, give it time to air out before you ever start your heater. Never start your heater in a shanty and get it going and warmed up before you drill your holes. Always drill your holes first, let it air out, and then it's safe to use the heater. But that's the first time I'd ever heard of that. It was on our local news, and that's something everybody who ice fishes with a heater needs to know about.
Wow.
So, yeah. It was unbelievable. They were burned pretty bad.
Let's add one more thing to my list of anxieties about ice fishing.
Yeah. I don't use a heater. I don't hardly ever use a shanty. So you're going to stand out in the, wind and cold and take it like a man. Okay.
Who is?
Nothing to worry about.
Who is? I am?
Nothing to worry about. You're going to do it with me. Oh, that's an uncomfortable silence.
I'm going to it with you, and I'm going to take it like a man.
We'll All right, don't twist this. Love you, JD, but not in that way. Okay, let's just go fishing. You were going to tell me about your ice fishing experience this weekend.
Well, I didn't go. I was hoping to go. You and I were supposed to go. Everyone knew about that, obviously. Our hookup didn't happen because of the weatherman getting it wrong, which was nice. We would have been fine. I almost called you to be like, are you going to go?
My son wanted to do that so bad.
You should have just called me up and been like, let's go. I would have changed my plans.
I figured you were already gone.
What morning was that? Sunday?
Yeah. Yeah, we cleared snow.
Oh, it was Saturday. No, it was Sunday. It was Sunday.
We cleared snow until noon, and he said we're probably not going to do the Pike trip. I said no. JD wanted to go skiing. I said it's noon. He's long gone. He said, I'm going back to Otsego. I came out here to find those lake trout. I haven't done it yet. I saw a few, but they wouldn't commit. I'm going back. I'm going to make this happen. And he went back to Otsego with that snow, dealt with it, hiked out 3/4 of a mile, and he engaged and caught his best to date lake trout. Got a 25-incher, beautiful fish, was super pumped about it. He went out there, bared down on him, and made it happen. Had a great time. And then we went out the next day, Monday, and we put 31 fish on the ice between us. So across the 4 days, we did okay. But one of the things I want to talk about in this episode is how the weather really affects your results in ice fishing, because it's never been more dramatically apparent to me than it has been this season. But before I get into that, tell me about your other ice fishing trip that didn't happen.
Yeah. So last time we met, you were talking about the weight of boots It's funny because I half listened both times. Tell me again. Now you talked about warmth weight.
Yeah, 2,400 grams.
2,400. Okay.
Feet are like toast.
So my buddy, Pete, I'll just say who it was, Pete Meyer up in Vermont, very good friend of mine. He's who was supposed to take me out. He got a huge tent that's like you can sleep two and cook two inside of it, plus the fisherman. It's huge. Yeah.
Holy cow.
It's like 12 feet long. Pretty wild.
Wow.
So are you aware of any muck boots that have the proper weight?
I have muck boots. I know they make them in different weights, but I don't, that's not what I'm using to ice fish. So no, I'm not.
So what are the ones that you, cause he was like, he's like, get a pair of like muck boots that have this like heavy insulation in them. And he only said 1,000. You're saying 2,400.
Because I'm going for the warmth. And the boots I have are waterproof. But the thing about the muck boots is they are 100% waterproof.
Yeah, mine exactly. Well, that was his thing, because the issue was that there was a bunch of water. He didn't say how much. There was a lot of water on the ice. He said it was rough out there, is what he
said. And that is a mess, an absolute mess to fish in. Not pleasant.
No.
You can't walk anywhere without, you got to walk slower. You're splashing everything. You're getting soaked and drenched. So yeah, that's a miserable time. Where was he fishing?
I forget the lake, but it was in the Southern Green Mountains.
Okay.
You know, cause I was in Killington. So we were supposed to go. We were supposed to go there.
Okay.
Down in the Southern Greens. But yeah, I had boots that were waterproof to the ankle. I had a pair of Sorels. You know, once the water
that's not going to work.
No, exactly. Once the water hits above your ankle, it's going to soak in that leather and come right into the boot.
That leather is going to act like a wicking mechanism and bring it right to your
feet. So I didn't even attempt. And my snowboard boots, which are very warm, those are the warmest things I have. Those would have been drenched as well.
They're not made for that.
I didn't get out twice. That was twice that I've struck out.
Third time's a charm.
Hope so.
Let's hope.
Let's hope there's still ice. There still aren't any warm-ups. It's freezing raining out there right now, and I'm concerned we're going to lose power. Hopefully we can get this episode done.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't. We're in the middle. I mean, I just got back from doing two appearances at Bass Pro Shops in Utica for their Triple Crown event, and the roads going out the first morning. Took me an extra 45 minutes to get there. They were good coming back. Good going there yesterday morning, but coming back last night took me almost an extra hour to get back. The roads were so bad. And now we got to deal with clearing this snow, and there's more coming behind it. And then midweek, even more. One of the guys in the store showed me. He said, "Have you seen the forecast?" I said, "Yeah, I know we're getting snow." He said, "Dude, if they're right about everything, we're getting 3 feet in like 6 days." I'm like, I don't have enough room to put that anywhere. So we'll see what we get. Everyone so far, we have not gotten the amount they predicted. Like when we were supposed to do our pike trip, we were supposed to get like a foot of snow. We got 3 inches, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We still had to clear it. And it worked out because Ryan went out and cracked the code on the lake trout and got his best ever. Yeah, if you've got water on the ice, it's a miserable mess. One of the guys I regularly ice fish with, he almost always carries a shovel in his sled because he prefers to shovel a nice area and drill his holes there so he's not dealing with the snow. But when you have water on the ice underneath that snow, all it does is create a lake on top. And now you're not dealing with the snow. You're dealing with standing water. And when the water comes up out of the hole, of course, it gets a couple inches deep, but then it soaks into all the snow around, and everywhere you walk, you're punching through and it's splashing, and it's just a miserable, miserable time. My feet are dry. It still takes some of the enjoyment out of it because you can't go anywhere without splashing. And it's winter time, so it's going to splash, going to soak in, going to freeze. Now you got your insulated bibs are stiff right up to your knee from splashing and freezing. So it's water on the ice is just miserable. But then you have those days where you get that melt and you've got the water and there's water on the ice, but you have the opposite effect. You drill your holes and that water drains. Well, you don't ice fish, so you haven't seen that. But a lot of times late in the season, you'll drill holes and any water on the ice, it starts going down those holes. It's going back into the lake. It's interesting. But I want to talk about how the weather, all these little storms have been impacting our results this season. Because this year, more than any other, I've noticed it's really, really impacted my results this year. Because my results have either been very, very good or very, very bad. And looking back, the bad days have been right after the storms. I mean, we had all that snow, and my son went after lake trout after that. He caught one, but it was the best one he's got to date. So that was good. We went the next day after things had settled down, and we had decent results. But so many times this year, we've gone like the day after a storm and, you know, post-frontal, and the results have been so meager and poor. Like, we went to one of my favorite perch lakes where in the wintertime, as long as you get in the right area, you can hammer them. And the reason we've been going the day after a storm, because it's the day that we both had available, and we're pulling out like 5 fish all day. It's like, man, we should be doing that in 5 drops. What is going on? But looking back, it was always a post-frontal day when we had those very, very meager results. And conversely, the few days that I have really, really, really done well and posted big numbers, like, you know, 60 fish, they've been days where we've got to fish today because tomorrow, I mean, that storm's coming in tonight and we won't be able to get out here tomorrow because it'll be clean and snow. Those pre-frontal days have been off the charts successful. What we really, really need to do is to concentrate more on getting out the days just before the storm, not the day just after, because the results have been so black and white dramatic this year with all these little storm systems coming through, it's really had an impact. And I'm tired of going out and having a day where I catch two fish or five fish and go, I can't believe that's all we got. So, and a case in point, my son back home in New Hampshire, he had a friend of his that had never ice fished before, and he wanted to go for lake trout again. My son's got a tremendous lake trout fishery 30 minutes from his house. And with that, he's got that live scope ice fishing system now. That's pretty incredible. You see everything. But the thing about it is, and some people knock it, some people love it, some people are on the fence. The thing it really does, though, is it shows you the attitude of the fish and stuff that you never, ever thought was happening below the ice. You get to see now and go, holy cow, that's what's going on. That's what they do. He went out yesterday and he called me last night. He said, I just had one of the most amazing days and most amazing experiences I've ever had on the ice. And I realized when we were done, I never put a fish on the ice. I got skunked. But it was an incredibly amazing experience because they had a storm coming in and they only got out in the afternoon and they had about a 2.5 hour window was all they had to fish. And he said, but we got a storm coming in, so I think those fish will be active. So they got out there and for the first, I think he said, hour and 45 minutes, there was nothing going on. They're on this this flat he likes. He's got a 60-foot flat he really, really likes. Seen a lot of lake trout there. There were balls of bait fish hanging on this flat. He said, that's going to pull the lake trout in, so we're in good position. We just got to watch for these trout to show up. And again, it was just a ghost town for the first hour and 45 minutes. But they had like 45 minutes left, and fish start showing up. And what this live scope was showing him was these lake trout would come in from both sides, like one or two on one side, one or two on the other. So there was three or four of these lake trout. They were just coming in from both sides to this ball of bait fish. They would just lay on the bottom and get underneath these. This ball of bait fish was suspended in the water column. These lake trout would work together. I mean, he would never know this without watching it on the live scope. But these lake trout would come in together and they'd come across the bottom and then they just shoot up through that bait fish school going diagonally through it towards the surface, just working together like a wolf pack and just decimating these balls of bait fish, you know. And he got to watch this. He said, that's incredible. So they started working their jigs real erratic, and these lake trout were hammering their jigs and hitting them so fast, he would feel the strike before he could see the fish on the live scope take his jig. The trout was still, flying up to that jig. And before it contacted the jig on the screen, he was feeling the strike. And that's got to be from flaring the gills, but it happens so fast. And they hooked a bunch of fish, but they were breaking off. He had one right up to the hole, and it broke off on the bottom of the hole. And he was also concentrating his efforts on trying to get his buddy to hook up and catch his first ever lake trout. So he was involved in that too, and his buddy did land one. But when it was all said and done, they stayed an extra 30 minutes, and and it got dark on them, and they just ran out of time. And that's when my son realized, as incredible as that was, I never landed a fish myself. But what I saw and what I experienced was so incredible. He said that front was coming in, and those fish just got fired up. But he never knew, and I never knew, that lake trout work together like that in groups. And I wish I could have been there to see it. You know, as he's explaining this to me, I'm picturing it in my mind, and man, I would have loved to seen that. And that's what the live scope can do for you on the ice. And we've talked about that. When I use it on my bass boat, open water, you can read the attitude of the fish and kind of adjust your presentation to try to figure out what it's going to take to trigger these fish. And it's the same thing when you're ice fishing. If you apply your technology to that, you can see the attitude of the fish. But just to watch them work together like a wolf pack, he said it was it was wild. They were like circling, and then they all at once, they all together rushed up through that school of bait fish, going through it at different angles, and just nobody was safe. It a pretty incredible experience for him to see that and watch it play out, you know, right underneath him. Just such a cool experience.
We got two big W's going on right now. We got weather and wolf pack.
Yeah.
Do you have another? Is there winter? Winter weather trout wolf pack. That might be the name of this episode.
Winter weather wolf packs.
Winter weather wolf pack.
There you go. I wish we had. Yeah, there's got to be a way. I know that you can record what you're seeing. He can just take a screenshot on his phone. I'll have to ask him to do that. He was so into watching what they were doing and mesmerized by it. I'm sure it never occurred to him to pull out his phone and shoot a video of that, but that would be cool to do. We'll have to do that. I mean, the detail that you can see on the screen now, we enjoyed watching it when we were ice fishing. The last day that he was here, we went out. And again, there was weather coming in that night. That's why we had a fairly decent day. It had been a couple of days past the last snow we had. So fish had settled back into normal winter patterns. And we went out with his live scope to this one lake that's been producing fairly well most of the winter, if you hit it on the right days. And again, with the weather system being passed a couple of days and a new one coming in the next day, we thought, well, let's see how they bite. And we went there. The last time I'd been there, I was catching them in 16 foot. The time before that, they were in 18 foot. I went to my area and we drilled one hole, dropped down his live scope. It was 16 foot. And we fished there a little bit. We got no response and no, weren't even seeing fish. So we gave it like 5 minutes, not happening here. I backed up about 50 feet, figured we'd be in deeper water, drilled a second hole. Put in this live scope, put down the transducer, and we immediately saw fish in all directions. So we said, okay. Again, it was still 16 foot, but we said, this is the spot. So set up his Eskimo pop-up, drilled two holes inside, one for the transducer in the middle, went to work. And at first, it took maybe 4 minutes to get fish to bite is all it took, because we could see fish all around us. But once we started jigging, then they started coming right into us. And it was interesting because they were not all aggressive. They were active, but we'd have groups of four or five come in and one would bite. And sometimes you'd see fish come through and they'd come up and one would hit your jig and you'd lift and you'd hook them. And in about two turns of the reel handle, he would come off and you'd go back to jigging and you'd get another strike and catch a fish. Now, when you're fishing blind, or if you're just using like a flasher unit, like a Vexilar, if you're jigging and you hook one and you bring him up just a little bit and he comes off, you keep jigging, you get another strike, you assume it's a different fish. We assume that once they're hooked and they experience that, but they get off, well, they're not biting again. That's not always true, because the other thing we saw on his live scope, we had a group of five fish come in. He got one of them to commit to his jig. Like I said, two turns of the reel handle. We saw that fish come off and he went, lost it. That fish started to swim back down to the other four. But as he dropped his jig, it did a 180 and re-nailed the jig. And he caught it that time. The same fish. We both saw it on the screen. Even though that fish had been hooked and had been reeled up a couple feet and came off, when that jig dropped down, it spun around and hit it a second time. That fish just wanted to meet my son and get caught. And he did. Congratulations to that fish. So although we tried to give fish intelligence from time to time, we tried to give them human characteristics. Couldn't fool that fish. He was too smart. Bluegill, perhaps, are not as bright as some other fish, because once hooked, they will turn around and do this. They will make the same mistake again. Failure to learn from previous mistakes, known as a repeat offender in the law enforcement community.
I thought you were about to say an acronym.
Okay.
Is there an acronym for that? I don't know. Say that again. If it's a repeat offender, do they say RO over the thing?
Yeah. in law enforcement, a repeat offender is described as failure to learn from previous mistakes. They just keep coming back for the same crime.
kind of like Raising Arizona.
That's where I got that.
Is that where
that's
it's from?
Where, yeah. That's the movie that line comes from.
Look at that, huh? Exactly.
early Nicolas Cage movie.
Nice, Roy. I got it.
You got it.
I got it.
That's it. Pulled Out of the Past. Good grief. How old is that movie? 30, 35 years old?
Yeah, it's old. It was one of Nicolas Cage's first.
Holly Hunter played his wife in that movie.
He kept on robbing with a starter pistol so he wouldn't get assault with a deadly weapon or anything. It was just a starter pistol. It was like a misdemeanor burglary charge every time or whatever it was.
Yep, I'll just take this pack of Huggies and whatever you got in the register. That was a hilarious movie. A little bit of dark humor, but yet some people hated it. I loved that movie. Thought it was great. Laughed all the way through it.
He's an odd duck, that Nicolas Cage.
Good actor, though.
He is a great actor. All the great actors are weird. I guess you kind of have to be, right?
I suppose. I don't know. I'm not a great actor. I like to catch fish.
So wholesome, Roy.
So we got a good, probably at least 4 weeks left of hard winter. And I'll tell you what, this year, as opposed to last year was like the worst year for ice fishing in decades. I mean, like I said it, last year I was on the ice twice and in my boat 11 times across the winter in upstate New York. And the thickest ice I ever found was 4.5 inches. I mean, it was gone early just because we didn't have enough. Otsego Lake never froze. We were running a boat with an outboard February 9th and catching our perch. We fished perch from a boat from December right on through till summer. It never froze. This year, there's already 12 inches on it. And we've had so many single-digit nights and days that didn't hit double digits. It's the ice is getting thicker and thicker. It's a good old fashioned winter. And the problem for me is I'm going to be ready to put my boats out in March and it ain't going to happen this year. It's probably going to be mid April before I can get on open water. And that's like a slow, painful death for me. I'm going to want to be getting out there and I'm not going to be able to do it. And that's excruciating for me. When I'm ready to put my boats out, I need to do it. So it's going to take a while for this ice to go out. So I know that going in. I'll have a lot of fun at the spring fishing classics at all the different stores I visit. But when that's done, I'm ready to hit open water. And I'm probably going to be dealing with ice everywhere for a while. So
plus, regarding the spring classic, we got some pretty big news.
Yes, we do. I spoke with the manager of the Utica store, and we have plans, and he's on board with this. Saturday, March 22nd, we would be doing our podcast live, recording live at the Bass Pro Shops in Utica, Saturday, March 22nd. So if you're in the area, put that on your calendar. Stop in and see us, say hi. Get on our podcast maybe and take advantage of the huge savings at the Bass Pro Shops Spring Fishing Classic. That's March 22nd. It's a Saturday. We will be in the store doing our podcast and they're looking forward to it. And so are we. So
yeah, this is a big deal. This is essentially like our 1 year anniversary.
It is, because we started this podcast in March in 2024. So it'll be the 1 year anniversary, and we'll have to come up with a theme for that episode. So looking forward to that. That'll be a blast.
Darn right. Come out and hang out.
Probably right in front of the fish tank, because that's where I do all my demos and my table set up.
That's even better. And plus, if we can, we need some merchandise. I'm going to get some hats made that say, let's see here. I builded my knowledge of fishing with Roy Bilby. That's too long. Builded. Just hashtag builded. We're going to start a movement, Roy. Builded.
You did. I
you
got tongue tied.
Yeah.
I tripped over my own words again, only this time you didn't edit it out. And it was
sometimes
funny.
It's too good. Roy, you make up more words.
Not intentionally.
No, I know. It's why it's because the fact that it is genuine and it's not intentional is why it's three times as funny. It's exactly what it is.
I get ahead of myself telling my stories and
I know.
The words come out. I trip over them and then I go to fix it and it's still there. So, but I listen to that segment and I laugh so hard. Yeah, I can laugh at myself along with everybody else. It's all good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That we're really looking forward to doing that particular podcast. People in the store are excited about it and, it'll be great. Looking forward to it. It'll be a different experience. But in between that, I still got to go up, do my tank demos and do my work for them. It'll be a fun day.
So when the weather warms up, what is the danger zone when you start staying away from the ice?
When you start seeing the snow is going to be gone. And when the ice starts getting those dark spots on it, that's when we're done with cutting holes. When it starts getting the dark patches on it, that's where it's getting thinner and you're actually seeing the water as you drive by. You're seeing the water where it's trying to work its way up through where the ice is thinner, and it'll start to deteriorate around the edge. Now sometimes you've got good solid ice out there but you've got 3 feet of open water between the shoreline and the edge of the ice, because it starts receding from the shoreline because the ground warms up with the sun, because the snow's gone. So it absorbs the warmth and that ice starts to melt. And I haven't done this, but I know every year there's that clutch of hardcore ice guys. You'll see it on the news every year in April. These guys use an extension ladder from the bank to the ice to get out there so they can cut holes and go ice fishing. And every year there's like a group of guys somewhere up on one of the Great Lakes where it broke away, and they're out floating on this huge sheet of ice, you know, the size of half a football field. And it broke away from everything, and they're just out there free floating, and they can't get back. Somebody's got to come and rescue them in a boat. And you know, they don't show this part on the news, but the rescue guys are there with the boats going, "Come on, you guys, get off the ice." And they're like, "Well, they're still biting, you know." Like, "We're on the clock. Pick up your stuff and get in the boat so we can get you back to the shore." And I've never been one of those guys. I'm the guy, and I have done this. I'm the guy in April who's standing on the bank when there isn't enough open water to cast into, seeing how thin the ice is and throwing rocks out there to make a big enough hole where I could cast. I did that as a teenager. Crazy. Here's a good one. And this is as an adult fishing a lake where both ends of the lake were open, but there was still ice bank to bank across the center, but it wasn't that thick. It was maybe an inch and a half thick. It was definitely going to go out, but it wasn't out yet. Now, I'm the guy who's got my boat on any water available when there's still ice on the lake. I have fished Otsego Lake when it was 15% open and caught fish because I got to be in my boat again, and it was April and I should be in my mind. We fished this one lake back in the 90s, early April. Like I said, it still had ice bank to bank in the center, and we weren't doing especially well in the lower end of the lake, but we got spots in the upper end, which was open, but it was, you couldn't get a boat up there. So what we did is we took an anchor. I had a 40-foot rope on my anchor. It took us an hour to do this. It's a Cheney style anchor, which has two points that pivot. You've seen me use those. Some people call it a fluke style. It's a Cheney style anchor, and it pivots. Those two points will dig in the bottom. And what we did is we threw that anchor out in front of us up in the air, so when it came down, those two points would stick in that ice. And we would pull the boat up onto the ice with the rope and bounce up and down in it until the ice broke. and pull ourselves closer with a rope, bounce up and down until the ice broke, until we got to the anchor, and then we'd throw it up in the air ahead of us and let it drop into the ice, let the point stick, and pull ourselves ahead with a rope and break through. This was probably, this field of ice that went across the center, bank to bank, was probably, I would say, about 40 yards across, and it took us an hour to cut a channel through that with this boat, and then we could drop the motor back down. It was an aluminum boat, wasn't going to hurt it. And then we dropped the motor back down, and now we're in the upper end, and we motor to our spot, and we absolutely crushed, hammered lights out on the perch. We loaded up big time. And it, so it was worth all the effort. But, you know, I'm not the guy who will cross a ladder to get to the ice. I'm the guy who's out there with a flamethrower trying to get rid of the ice or rocks or an anchor so I can get to the open water I want to fish. And when we were done, of course, we just motored back through the channel that we cut. And then maybe a week later, that ice was out. But yeah, I'm that guy. I won't be the holdout that just can't get off the ice. I'm the guy who's trying to melt the ice so I can fish in my boat.
That's me.
And that's what's going to be come April, because like I said, we got a lot of ice this year, and we got another. What I need to do right now is just get my mindset that I'm going to ice fish as hard as I can the next month until we have the spring fishing classic, and then get into that, and then look for any open water I can find. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So if you got gift cards from Christmas you still got, save them up for the Spring Fishing Classic, because you're going to save even more money. Those gift cards will go even farther. Get out and get geared up for the spring fishing season. That's what I'm doing already. So,
and get out there and see Roy's Instagram at all lowercase Roy Bilby. So sneak into his DMs and you can chat with him.
I will always answer you. I got a lot of people that talk to me on a regular basis. I appreciate the interaction, and I hope that listening to the podcast is giving you helpful tips that you can go out and catch more fish, because that's the whole point of this, is to help you tap into your own personal angler within.